Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host Tim Henney. When our first guest, Deborah Reber, heard her 12-year-old son, who happens to have ADHD, Asperger's, and a ridiculously high IQ, say that when he was at school, he always had to apologize for his behavior. She got those mama bear shackles up and realized that there needed to be more resources out there for parents of what she calls differently wired kids. What started as a podcast offering interviews with the experts and some other advice called TILTS, or Practical Tips for Parents of Children with Exceptional Conditions, that turned into 350,000 downloads or so, and now a book. Deborah Reber joins us to discuss Differently Wired, Raising an Exceptional Child in a Conventional World. Good morning to you, Deborah. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, maybe you should take us through Asher and your son. Now, how many years of age?
He's 13. I got a teenager in the house.
Woohoo! So you tell this story of when he comes to the dinner table and he apologizes for whatever it was that he was doing, which is not something you would normally apologize for. And he said, well, it's that I have to apologize for everything I did at school growing up. You now homeschool him. But describe that just the surrounding that he was in and his exceptions, what makes him differently wired?
Well, he is what's called twice exceptional, which means that he's gifted with a secondary diagnosis, and he has ADHD and Asperger's. And, you know, this is something we discovered over time. You know, they don't come with a handbook or labels, you know, when they come into the world. And he really struggled in a traditional school setting, and because of the way that his brain works and because of the way that he learns. And so often he would get dysregulated in a classroom, and that would come out as behavioral challenges or just intensities or, you know, not sticking with the program, essentially. And we were in a couple of school systems over the course of 3 years, three schools. And it wasn't until I started homeschooling him when I really discovered, you know, who he is as a learner, but then started to uncover things that had happened in other schools where I realized, as you were talking about, that he was going through his daily life feeling like he had to apologize for things that were completely out of his control. You know, his needs weren't being met, and he was responding accordingly.
Yeah. And so you have long been a writer and author of many young adult, both fiction and nonfiction books. But at this point, you sort of decided to make a bit of a shift and you started a podcast. And I assume that's because you just found that there weren't a lot of resources out there, maybe even in a peer group from parent to parent, how to deal with kids with these exceptions, kids that are differently wired.
Yeah, when you're going down this path, it is so difficult to just get information. And also, your pediatrician might be normalizing and saying, maybe they're just intense, they'll grow out of it, or your friends are trying to downplay things. When you as a parent know, like, no, there's something else going on here. And it's really challenging to know where to turn, how to get an assessment, you know, what to do to keep your family thriving, because it can be very isolating. And so, you know, I went through this myself, and I'm, as you mentioned, I've written for years, and I am a researcher and a really resourceful person. And as I went through my own journey, I just knew I had to share what I was learning with other parents, because it's not okay in my book for us to feel isolated and overwhelmed when there are millions of us all over the world in this same situation.
Deborah, I'm really curious about the term neurodiverse. Did you coin that, or is that a term that's used in the educational field or in the scientific or health industries?
Yeah, I did not coin the phrase, and it is something, a term that's really, it is used among the scientific community, and it's more and more common. And what it refers to is this idea that these differences in wiring and the learning differences like a dyslexia or dysgraphia or ADHD or autism spectrum anxiety, those things are all natural variances within the human brain. So rather than looking at them as disorders, you know, that there's a normal brain and then there's the disordered brain, rather there's a range of variances in how our brains are wired, and it's just part of the human experience.
And that's probably the part that jumped out at me the most with your book is you've reframed this whole thing, and you've really called these kids out for their diversity, this spectrum which has been broadened, and that they have these exceptional qualities. And that mm-hmm. I think I just heard you say that disorder. And I'm wondering about where's that line where you can view it as an exceptional aspect, or where does it become a disorder? Or are we completely blurring and changing that?
Well, I hope to change the language around it. I mean, and that's not to say that there aren't real challenges and symptoms for different, you know, neuro differences, and, you know, that it doesn't come with those things. But I think when you use a term like a disorder or deficit, you know, that implies that there is something wrong, that there's a problem that we need to fix. And I believe, as you said, that these kids have incredible strengths and gifts, and we should support them in developing those. I don't believe that differently wired kids are broken. I believe that they're exactly who they're supposed to be. And our job as parents and educators is to help them tap into their gifts and discover who they are so that they can become self-actualized adults who can really contribute to society.
We just had a conversation. The radio station this morning had a conversation with our business director of our school district, and the question was asked, why are you adding staff in these areas? And, you know, it gets really right down to what you're talking about. There are more resources, at least here in this community, going toward the emotional well-being of the children in the schools, which is a very big change. I think that's a paradigm shift from just a relatively short time ago. But it does take resources, and it is a mm-hmm. reframe of the traditional model, which is how do we deal with kids who don't fit the mainstream and are different, whether it's emotionally or intellectually or, you know, with these other exceptional qualities. And it does take a reallocation of resources, and it's in some cases adding staff and adding money. Is that a fair assessment? Do you see that happening from your experience with your child?
Well, yeah, and I love hearing that that's happening in your school district there. That's fantastic. I think I do see a sea change coming. There is, and I certainly know that educators want to be able to support these kids, and I think a lot of them feel constrained in their classrooms. They don't have the resources. They don't have the support or even the knowledge to understand what different kids need. So I think it's something that is changing over time as we become more and more aware of who these kids are. I hope that my book is read by educators so they can better understand the different ways these kids are showing up in their classroom, and also can form alliances with parents like me, because together I think we can make a lot of progress.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Deborah Reber. She's written a book called Differently Wired: Raising an Exceptional Child in a Conventional World. And you say it's time to say no to trying to fit square peg kids into round holes and to say yes to the gifts of their uniqueness. And as you've been talking, I've been thinking about, well, a friend of mine has a child who's the same age as one of my sons. And growing up through the public school system, because he didn't display sort of those typical traits of someone on the autism spectrum, I don't think he was diagnosed until maybe late in high school, which is tragic. But also because he wasn't the stereotypical person on the autism spectrum, it makes me wonder if we are even stereotyping those disorders and then kind of creating a one size fits all for those disorders instead of being able to really, really play on the uniqueness of each individual child?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And as you're talking, I'm thinking of one of the sayings is that, you know one kid on the spectrum, There is no typical profile because they are all so unique. I think it is really important, and it takes a lot of time, especially on parents' parts, to tease apart and really get to know, the nuances of their child's brain. We have to become kind of researchers and align with teachers and other experts to help us do that, because there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach. You know, with something like dyslexia or dysgraphia, there are definitely strategies that can help in a more practical way. But with some of the other differences, it is a little trickier to navigate and figure out, and it takes time to understand what each child needs.
I found it interesting, as you rattle off this list of sort of exceptions, you include those that we would imagine, ADHD, autism, you say other neuro differences, but then you include dyslexia and you include giftedness. And I thought that was interesting, giftedness, because sometimes that can present as much of a challenge in a good and or bad way, I suppose. Can you talk about giftedness?
Yeah, it's funny. When I launched TILD, I got a lot of emails from parents saying, oh, thank you so much for including gifted in your description here, because I think the word gifted is so loaded, and it triggers a lot of people who feel like if you're raised, those who call their child gifted think that their kid is really just smart and better, or that they have, they've got it made. Like, what problems could they have? But with giftedness comes a lot of emotional intensities, sensitivities, and just moving through the world in a way that doesn't align necessarily with their peers, which can be very isolating. And they often need to learn in a different way. It's not just about working higher than grade level. It's about the fact that their brain actually processes information differently. So I do consider giftedness to be a special need in its own right.
Deborah, I'm curious about where you live and how you got there. I understand you live in Amsterdam now.
I do live in Amsterdam. Yes, we're living in the Seattle area. We moved there right before my son was born, and we were really struggling finding a school fit for him, going through several schools between kindergarten and second grade, and just feeling like, okay, this is not working. We're not finding a solution. What are we going to do now? And that, as we were asking that question, my husband had an opportunity to move through his job, and we just decided, you know what? We got to question everything. Let's question our educational approach and where we're living. So we moved in 2013, and I started homeschooling my son, and we're still there. We've been there 5 years now.
Well, so that I'm curious, because I was going to ask, did you move to Amsterdam to reorganize your lives around your child and sort of the educational opportunities and societal pressures? And it really, that is my question, is there... do you see the potential or possibility of expanding the current educational system or evolving it to address the needs of these kids? Or do we need to scrap the whole thing and just start homeschooling everybody? And that's
well,
an extreme example.
Yeah, no, I hear your question. And unfortunately, homeschooling is a really good option for many of these kids. And it's not possible for a lot of families. So I'm not going to stand here and say, yes, they need to be homeschooled. I'm very optimistic about what can happen in the school system. I think most of your listeners would agree, no matter how their kid is wired, that they're, we need to do some work and some reform in how we're teaching these kids to better prepare them and teach them to be critical thinkers and all those things that we want. So I think those of us in the school system, parents who are navigating that, can be a really big part of helping that change happen. I hope that I can play a role in that as well. I'm optimistic, but it's not going to happen overnight.
Deborah, how did you come up with Tilt parenting, or why did you call it TILT? And TILT is sort of a, you go through about 17 of them in your book. Your book is organized around those principles. What does TILT mean?
Yeah, I wish I had some great answer with an acronym or something, but when we moved abroad, I was at the Jersey Shore with my family, and someone snapped a photo of Asher and me on the Tilt-A-Whirl, the amusement park ride that kind of whips you around, and there's something about that picture where we're holding on for dear life, and our hair is blowing back, and we've got these grins, and we just are completely out of control, and that word stuck with me. You know, that's how a lot of us as parents feel, like we've just got to hold on. We don't have a lot of control in the situation, but there can be a lot of joy if we're willing to just go with the next, you know, whip that whips us around the corner. And my son was very involved in naming TILT parenting, and he approved and didn't feel there was any negative connotation, and so I went with that name.
So after you started your podcast, I don't know how long it took to get to this point where you have 350,000 downloads, which is pretty amazing. Did it surprise you, or did it just really hit home what you already knew, and that was that there aren't enough resources out there?
Yeah, I think it surprised me and it didn't surprise me. I mean, it's been amazing to see it grow, and it's a very word of mouth kind of thing, again, because people are not necessarily talking about it out loud outside of the walls of their family. But I've been overwhelmed, really, by the response, and I get emails every day from parents telling me how, you know, they listen to episodes and they cry because they feel like finally someone gets what they're feeling. So it's been an incredible honor to do. It's my passion work, and I'm really grateful.
Well, it's great work, and also great work here in creating this book that I assume is sort of condensing a lot of your podcast episodes into a book. Is that right?
Yeah, it's very, it's designed to be inspirational and kind of a rally cry, like, we can do this, you're not alone, but also provide a lot of very practical insight based on the many, many interviews that I've done and the resources I've discovered over the years.
The book is Differently Wired, Raising an Exceptional Child in a Conventional World. Our guest, Deborah Reber. Deborah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.